This is our monthly teleclass, February 2019. We have a topic that is of interest to coaches: the mindset of success. Someone who has as her byline on her papers, inspiring change, empowering success. Boy, does that fit. And that is Astrid. Astrid Baumgardner, a lawyer and a PCC coach on the way to MCC, coaches creative people to success at the Yale School of Music. Astrid is the head of career strategies, and through her coaching company, Astrid Baumgardner Coaching and Training, she does all this amazing work. She's the author of a book with a very interesting title, Thrive Like a Creative, which is going to be published in a few months of this year. She is grateful to be teaching, coaching, and writing, which help her to live on her life purpose, which is to expertly and passionately inspire and empower joy and flow so that we spread creativity and exhilaration through the world. Well, it doesn't get better than that, but it might, so pay attention, because here is Astrid. And thank you for sharing yourself with us.
Terry, thank you so much for inviting me to present today. That beautiful life purpose statement that Terry just read to you is something that she and I worked on. And I'm so grateful to you, Terry, for facilitating that process and being my guide to really tapping into and expressing my life purpose in such an eloquent way. And I live it every day, and I'm really grateful to you every day. So thank you for that. And I am delighted to be here to talk to you about the mindset of success. And to get us started, I want to get us started with a vision. So it's 2 years from now. So that's February of 2021. And you are working towards your success and creating your success. And so you've achieved a big goal, and you're on your way to really nailing it and making something so big and exciting for yourself. So I want you to picture what that success looks like, what that goal might be, and then think about the following. What is energizing you as you create your success? And what is helping you to believe in yourself to be able to create that wonderful success? How about the obstacles that you've had to overcome in order to achieve success? And what about those opportunities that you created to make the success happen in your life? So I just want you to feel how good that is to be able to feel success and those different elements of it, because what I've just introduced you to is the mindset of success. And I'm really passionate about helping creative people like you to live fulfilling, purposeful, and successful lives. And what I'd like to do today is introduce the four elements that I have put together that I think define the mindset of success, so that you can tap into your own creativity and inspire and empower yourself and your own clients to help them achieve success. So let's get started. Creativity is sort of my bag. I've been playing the piano since childhood, and I continue to make music to this day. And I love working with musicians and creative people, which I do at Yale, which I do in arts leadership training. So I surround myself with creative people. And I also work with a lot of creative professionals. So creativity to me is something that is very present in our day and age. And I think it's very important today in the 21st century. And I think as coaches, we all know firsthand some of the challenges of creating success in the 21st century. We're here in the digital age, and the digital revolution has upended a lot of things we've long taken for granted. So all those wonderful technologies that we have at our fingertips enable us to access lots and lots of interesting information and to transcend borders and to be in touch with each other globally. And what that has done is it has really changed many of our institutions. And I'm sure we have clients who are suffering as industries like the recording industry, publishing, so many tenure track teaching, so many things have been changed as a result. But on the other hand, the digital revolution has created many, many opportunities for lots of people. So it's a way of embracing a new way of thinking. And so for us as coaches, how do we do that and how do we help our clients achieve success in this day and age? So one thing that I'm really interested in is what is creativity? Because in this day and age, we have to be pretty flexible and ask a lot of questions and be lifelong learners and be constantly curious and pay attention to opportunities that may arise. So what does it mean to be a creative person in this world? I think that a creative person, I'd like to quote a friend of mine, Pulitzer Prize winning composer David Lang, who said, and he introduced me to this idea many years ago when we met, he said, well, as a creative person, I'm a problem solver. And I think that that's a really great definition of creativity. Because when you think about a composer, when you think about a writer, a stage designer, a computer app developer, a scientist, right? They're all trying to fill an empty space and do something that doesn't exist and provide the world with something new and important that they think they want to put out into the universe. So that to me is the definition of creativity, is asking questions that have never been asked, creating something that doesn't exist, putting together ideas in a new way so that we can draw new conclusions, and practicing and producing works that touch our imagination. And so creatives are those problem solvers who are asking those tough questions and creating things for the world. And when I was researching my book, I was thinking about, well, why is it important to know about creativity in the 21st century? And it's so interesting. I came across a study of executives that IBM did in 2010, and they asked CEOs of global companies, what do you think is the top skill that today's people need, today's employees and leaders need? And the number one skill that they cited was creativity, which I think is pretty fascinating. And the World Economic Forum is now citing creativity as the top skill that employers need to pay attention to. So I think creativity is really important. And so I feel very excited every day when I get to inspire and empower creative people to put their work out there. And I believe that the start of success and creative success is your mindset, which is what we're going to be talking about today. So a mindset to me is your attitude. It's your experience. It's how you perceive the world. And I have come up with a four-prong template for what I think the definition is of the mindset of creative success. It's a passion for what you do. It's the positive attitude that inspires you to go out and create your success. It's persevering in the face of challenge and being resilient and being willing to make mistakes and take risks and learn from those mistakes and risks, and then being proactive as you look for opportunities. So I call it the four P's: passion, positivity, perseverance, and proactivity. And so that opening question that I pose to you, what energizes you? What helps you to believe in yourself? What challenges have you overcome as you create success? And what opportunities have you created? That's a little bit of what those four elements are and what they look like. So I'd like to delve into each one of those. And at this point, I'm going to be asking a lot of questions. So I hope you join in this conversation and share your thoughts. So one of the things I love working with my creative population is that they pursue a passion. And to me, passion is what energizes you. It's what gets you up in the morning. It comes from a deep place. It's your energy and your drive and your enthusiasm for what you do. So I'm just curious out there, what are some of your passions? Passions. What do you love? I love music.
I love creating things. I love art.
Art, beautiful. What else?
I love horses.
Nice.
Getting facilitated with horses.
Wonderful.
I love nature.
I love nature, absolutely.
It's John. I loved when you said lifelong learning, because as Kathy knows,
That, I think, is the basis for a lot of things. I use a lot in leadership training. So I just like to see people learn. I'm just fascinated that I can help somebody learn something. Thank you.
And John, that's really interesting because you love lifelong learning, and that's what you're empowering your leaders to do. So that's great that you connect it to what you do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What else?
I also am a lifelong learner, passionate about learning, feel empowered when I'm learning. But I also am passionate about creating things with my hands. Not really with my mind, but with my hands.
Yes, exactly. So one of the reasons I love working with people like you is that you know your passions, right? But maybe we have clients who are a little stuck, right? That they, when you ask them, what do you love? I have encountered this, I don't know about you, but in addition to all the creative people I work with, I've also done a lot of work in transitions with executives who are transitioning to what they call the do-gooder space. And they're there because they've had very successful careers, and they want to spend the rest of their lives or the next chapter of their lives doing something for the good of mankind in the service of others. And many of them are really stuck. They don't know what area to pursue, what their passions are. So if you have clients like this, or perhaps there's some of you on this call who are wondering about, well, maybe I don't know what my passion is, there's something I'd like to share with you, and that is a lot of people, I think, have a very restricted definition of passion. A passion is the subject that I love. You know, I love horses, I love nature, I love music, right? And what I like to do with them is to say, yes, absolutely, the subject that fascinates you is indeed a passion, but there are other ways to find a passion. So what about the mission that you care about in the world? I work with some nonprofit leaders, and that's what gets them out of bed in the morning, you know? Domestic violence, helping women who are victims of domestic violence, helping children, hungry children, helping people who are illiterate. Those are passions because they feel this strong sense of mission. Passion can also be the way you interact with people, whether it is you like to coach or teach or lead or collaborate. That too can be the source of a passion. What's very interesting is that passion can also be the way you think. Some people love to solve puzzles. I, for one, I love crossword puzzles. I'm a big New York Times daily and Sunday crossword puzzle person because I love to figure out how things work. And so that is another way I express my passions. And then finally, what about a process that one follows? And I have a really great story. I had a friend who literally had a midlife crisis when he was 52 years old. He just needed to change his life. It was pretty extreme. He was a very successful business executive, married to a very glamorous lady, living on Park Avenue in this very high life. And he just said, this is not the life I want to lead. I want to be married to somebody and have children and, you know, work on my own and follow my own drum. And I don't know what that looks like. So we actually talked, and I suggested that he do a little bit of artist's way. I don't know if any of you have experienced the artist's way, but that's this 12-step program for unblocking creativity. And one of the tenets of that, by the way, if anybody reads the New York Times, there was an interview with Julia Cameron in this Sunday's paper. She's the person who came up with this artist's way. But one of her things is artist pages where you just write for 10 minutes in the morning unedited. And he started doing that and discovered, he remembered that when he was in high school, he really loved film. He was the president of his film club. So he went home and visited his mom and went up to the attic and found this big box with his old movies. And he said, film, this is so great. And he signed up for, God bless New York City, where you can take a course in anything you want. He signed up for a filmmaking course at the New School. And he made a movie, and then he made another movie. And then he remarried, found a lovely young woman. They had two kids, and they moved to California. And no, this is not Jack Nicholson, and no, he did not become a movie producer. But what he discovered through this was, yeah, movies were really fun to make, but what he loved was the process, coming up with the script, filming, editing, putting the music in, putting the titles in. And so what he then transitioned to, since he had come out of a big law firm, was a consulting firm on knowledge management for law firms. So a thing that he knew something about, but again, helping clients with the process. So again, that might be your passion, is a 1, 2, 3, 4, you're really great at process. So with your stuck clients, that might be something that you can help them with, to tap into something a little bit broader so that they can experience that energy from passion. But this crowd, I bet we've got a lot of passions here. So what I'd like you to do, and this is a really great way to capture that passion, is to go back to the moment that you first realized that that passion was something really important to you, that it was somehow different from everything else in your life. You know, when I ask this question to musicians, I'll hear things like, I was 6 years old, I went to the community band concert in my little town, and I saw the guy playing the trumpet, and I said, I want to be that guy. And that motivated them, things like that. So I'm curious from some of you, when did you first discover that passion and realize that it was really different for you, something you had to have in your life?
I think I'm fairly visual, and I love doing photography, and it continues on. And I almost wish that I had some of the old black and white rolls of snaps that I took with my Brownie camera. And it's kind of evolved over the years into lots of other film. And now, of course, I can snap away on my phone. So, but the really good stuff was done on slides. And I love seeing, I love they're like my creative babies.
Nice. And so you mentioned a Brownie camera, so it sounds like you were quite young when this
came. Can you tell? Yeah. How many of these people don't even know what a Brownie camera is?
Oh, I had one too. I remember my little Brownie camera. And I saw those little pictures. Absolutely. Thank you. That's great. Who else? That moment that you realized that what you're passionate about in childhood, adolescence, adulthood, made a difference, something that you really needed to keep in your life.
I remember mine was when I was about 10 years old. And we were given an assignment to do in school to copy a drawing done by the teacher. And I copied it, and it was easy, and I got lots of kudos, and it was fun, and it was something it was that moment. I just loved the art stuff.
Right. And that's so great, because you mentioned your passion is art, and there you are 10 years old, and it's easy. And that's often the definition of a passion, something that just comes naturally well to you. Now, how can you use this? It's very interesting. For example, with my musician crowd, when I have them do this exercise, musicians these days are really called upon to engage audiences. It's not enough for many young, particularly younger audiences, to just go to a concert hall and sit there in the dark and listen to Beethoven. A lot of people need a little help, or need a little bit of encouragement, or need some engagement, since today's audiences really are looking for experiences. And many musicians now are called upon to speak about their work. And so I tell these musicians, you know, when you're aware of when you discovered your passion, that is an amazing thing to share with audiences, because then they feel your passion, and they can get really excited about listening to you play. So for your clients, this is a really fun exercise to do, to say, what's your passion? When did you discover it? What was that moment? And to really capture that moment. And then to use that in one's life, when you want to inspire other people, when you want to inspire yourself, if you're called upon to give presentations or you speak in public, another great way to introduce yourself is through your passion. So that's the first element of our mindset of creative success. I'm going to move on to the second one, which is the second P of positivity. Now, I don't know if anybody's ever taken the StrengthFinders strengths assessment. So I've taken it 4 times for a variety of reasons. And every single time I get positivity. So when I discovered through coach training that positive psychology was a field of study, I thought, this doesn't get much better than that. And what do positive psychologists do? Remember, those were the folks who said, here we are as therapists helping people to get out of dysfunction. When, why don't we use our training to help people get better? And they use strengths, of course, as one of their first interventions. And I love the idea of positive psychology, that there's this belief that we're entitled to be happy, and that there are things we can do to make us happier. And their definition, and I think this really makes a lot of sense, is doing something that brings you joy and gives you optimism about the future. So there's a handout that you can all access after this, and I have lots of resources on there. So one of the resources I'm going to cite is a positive psychology researcher named Dr. Sonia Lubomirsky, who's written a book called The How of Happiness. And she tells us that for us to be happy, the capacity for happiness. 50% is genetic, inherited from our parents, 10% from our life circumstances, and then 40% is within your control. So that's pretty good that we have a 40% capacity for getting happier. And one of the elements that is often cited among positive psychologists is a concept that I would now like to introduce to you and have you experience. And it's a 3-minute exercise that I'm going to invite you all to participate in. And the only thing you have to do is to close your eyes and take a deep breath. So I invite you all to close your eyes, relax in your chairs, and take a nice deep breath. And as you're breathing in, I would like you to all go back to a time when you were doing something that you love, where you're performing flawlessly and feeling in the flow. And this can be any experience, from a creative passion to a professional encounter to a leadership experience to a relationship, anything where you feel your best self. And in this experience, you're focused and clear on what you're doing. You feel challenged, and yet you're up to that challenge, and you're getting feedback that tells you how well you're doing, and you're totally immersed in this wonderful activity, and time is going by, and you do not even notice it, because you so love what you're doing. So I'd like you to zero in on that experience, and start to pay attention to what you're seeing when you're experiencing this joy and this flow. What are some of the shapes that you see? And what are the colors that you associate with this experience of joy and flow? And now, along with the things you're seeing, what are you hearing? What are the sounds that envelop you when you're experiencing joy and flow? So I want you to take in those shapes and colors and the sounds you're hearing. And now, what about the temperature of the space in which you're having this experience? And perhaps, what are you touching? And what is the feeling in your body when you're in this space of joy and flow? So along with our shapes and colors and sounds and the things we're touching, what are you smelling? Some aromas that you associate with this, and maybe even some tastes. So take in the shapes and colors and the sounds and the tastes and the aromas and the feeling in your body. And on a count of five, I'd like you to open your eyes. 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Please open your eyes. It's feeling pretty good, right? Because the chances are that you just tapped into a psychological state known as flow. And this is something that comes out, again, of the research of positive psychology, when you are at your optimal best. And it comes out of the work of positive psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And people at flow experience it in many different ways and in many different experiences. And I'd love to hear from you. What kinds of experiences did you call up to experience flow? What do you think? I get it a lot from music, art. What about Kathy?
Well, I was making pottery.
Ooh.
Feeling the feel of the clay and looking at the color of the clay, watching the form out of nothing, listening to rock and roll music and just completely flowing.
Nice. Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing all the senses that you tapped into. That's great. Who else wants to share an experience? Yes. Because what's very interesting is that Csikszentmihalyi, when he started doing his research, figured that the people who would really resonate with this were the artists, the musicians, the sculptors. But when he started doing his experiments, he discovered that people in sports, skaters and skiers and mathematicians and lawyers and dentists and doctors, pretty much anybody who was really immersed in what they were doing and feeling that incredible surge of confidence and joy and flow, it can happen to anybody. So that's another really great thing to do with your clients, to engage in this meditation. And you'll notice I tried to invoke all the senses to get people to really tap in and feel that experience. And Kathy, thank you so much for sharing in the way you did. because it's a really wonderful way to access the optimal self. And so the definition of flow is voluntarily engaging in an activity where you're focused and clear on what you're doing, and you have a goal, and you're getting feedback. And here's the really interesting thing. You feel challenged, but you know that you can meet that challenge. And so literally you hit a sweet spot where your level of skill meets the challenge. And that's why you get into that time loop, because you're so motivated to keep going that you don't even notice the time is going by. And so there are a lot of benefits to being at flow. Right? We feel great. And when we feel great, we're more inspired and more motivated to do things. Another thing, it's a growth experience, because as I just explained, if you're feeling challenged and you're meeting that challenge, you're improving and you're growing. It's inherently pleasurable. So you want to keep doing it and keep getting better. And it provides this sense of intrinsic motivation. So what's very interesting is Csikszentmihalyi wrote a lot of books about this, and one of them is called Finding Flow, and he talks about how to maximize flow and bring it into your life. And from that, I was inspired to do an exercise that I'd like to do with you. So I'd like you to each think of a few words that describe what you're like at flow. And just jot these down, and I'd love for some people to share. What are the words that describe you at flow? Because I'll show you how we can use this. So, what are some words?
Surprise.
Surprised. Nice. Okay, what are some other words?
Going with ease.
With ease. Lovely.
Fly.
What's that?
Fly.
Fly. I love it. Yeah.
Focused.
Yep. Focused. Fabulous.
Excitement.
Excitement. Yep.
Myself.
Oh, I love it. Beautiful. Oh, so nice. Challenged. Yep.
Curious.
Curious. Excellent. Okay. Somebody's writing in a tune. Cool.
Deeply silent reflection.
Deeply silent reflection. Very nice. These are so interesting.
And there are some in the chat also, Astrid. We have from Jerry, energy, optimism, and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Iris said it, energized and attuned.
Yes, excellent. So this is the exercise. It's really simple. All you need to do is write a sentence that starts with the word, I am. And then you add your flow words to write your flow affirmation. So I'd love for you all to just do this, and then I'm going to show you how we can use this. Now, those of you who do group coaching, this is a really great exercise to do with the group. Because when people share, what I have people do is I always go around the room and have everybody share one word. Because often one word from someone, I'm sure in this room was the same thing, will inspire other people's words. So you can come up with a really nice statement of your flow affirmation. So here's the deal on the flow affirmation. It comes from actual experience. And I think that's why it's so powerful, because it's a reminder of what you're like at your optimal best. And it's not as though I said, well, let's pretend you're attuned, or let's make up a situation where you feel energized. No, you had this experience, you tapped into it, and you're just articulating what it was like to be there. And this flow affirmation is a reminder of what you're like at your best. So let's see how we can use this, right? Because this can be a big, powerful. I will share with you. Musicians tell me that they use this when they're going into an audition, when they're about to give a performance, when they want to feel at their very best. Business executives tell me that they use this when they go into a tough meeting to remind them that they're absolutely capable of being at the top of their game when they're going into a big negotiation, or they're having a meeting where they have to decide something and they know they're going to get a lot of pushback. So it's a, you know, people use it in many different ways. But the way to start maximizing your flow is a couple of things I can suggest. First of all, to become aware of the situations in which you find yourself at flow. And this is an interesting part of Csikszentmihalyi's research. Flow can happen in small moments. And it's a lot like when Terry was doing the Life Purpose with you, where she always has us do one story of that momentary encounter where you're feeling on purpose. And it's the same thing with flow, that you can be in flow in a concert, in a lecture, in a performance, in an encounter with, you know, in a coaching session. I get into flow a lot in coaching. I'm sure you all do too. But you want to be aware of that. And what happened with Csikszentmihalyi was, here's how he did his experiments. He had people set timers, I think 40 times a day. And every time the timer went off, the little bell went off, you had to write down what you were doing and how you were feeling. And he had a small subset of his subjects, his experimental subjects, live humans, not animals, live humans. And he said to these people, the minute you start to feel good, stop doing what you're doing. And he had to cancel that part of the experiment after a day and a half because those interview subjects said to him, they called him up and they said, don't do this to us. You're robbing us of our joy in life. And so what he discovered from that is that flow can occur in a momentary conversation with a loved one. When you're out in your garden, somebody mentioned nature. When you're out walking and you're feeling so connected to the universe. And so start to pay attention to those moments in your day when you are at flow. And engage in those activities on a daily basis. And if there's anybody here who does music or art or, you know, the real hardcore creative things that Csikszentmihalyi was talking about, he calls that super flow. And so that's a really good way to engage with your flow by engaging in those activities. And of course, be mindful when you're in that space because you want to be able to capture that. And then what's really interesting is that when you know how to use flow in one area of your life, see how you might apply it to other areas of your life. So that's really interesting. There's another way that I help clients use their flow affirmation. You have a series of words. So we have some really great words in this room: surprised, easeful, energized, focused. So if you want to really tap into your flow, make it a goal every day to be one of your words. So to wake up and say, okay, today I'm going to fly. Somebody's used that word. I thought that was really an interesting one. So you might want to think about what that would look like in terms of specific actions. So whoever it was that said fly, can I coach you on that? I'd love to hear what an action would be that you would take to show us that you were flying.
Yeah.
So what would that look like? If tomorrow you woke up and said, today, my flow word is fly.
Yeah, it's like being at ease when I fly. You were challenging us to be in flow. Yeah. So when I fly over my dreams, my wishes, my passions, and watching them all, you know, flying over and just enjoying being there.
Nice.
You know, observing, remembering that they are there.
Exactly.
So and it's good to have them present and to remember and to remind that, yeah, it's like freedom.
Yes.
And with a sense of purpose.
Right.
They are there and you see them. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, that's
just a poetry moment, because I didn't share, but poetry is one of my passions.
Nice. So. Yeah. So maybe tomorrow, in order for you to get into that space of flying, to start thinking about that, and what might be literally something you could do with that wonderful energy inside you?
You know, I think I do that quite easily, often. Quite often, I get into this space in my head where I can stay in this state for quite some time.
Yeah, well, I can just tell the way you're talking about it. You look so both energized and very peaceful around it. Like, it sounds like it really is very authentic to you.
It is a place that I know, yeah.
Yeah, I can tell. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing. So this is a really great tool for yourselves, just as you just shared with us, as well as we can help our clients with that. And there's one more area that I think we can help our clients with. And this is going to transition into my next element, because we're still at positivity, right? But a lot of times when we're achieving success, we hit bumps along the road. Let's face it. We all know as coaches that setting goals is really not the hard part. It's really being aware of the challenges that interfere with our ability to achieve those goals. And one of our biggies, and I encountered a lot, and I'm sure you do too, is the voice of the inner critic, right? So as we're, you know, on the road to success, a lot of times as we try to push ourselves perhaps, or we're inclined to go to the next level, and it's unknown and it's foreign and it's risky and it's scary, there's maybe a little voice that crops up that says, who do you think you are that you can do this? You're never going to do it, right? And I'm sure we've all encountered that voice, and I'm sure our clients have shared that. And using flow is a really powerful way to overcome and to challenge that voice. And that voice is going to be with us, and the question is, what do we do with it? So there are some people who are just going to stay stuck in that voice of gloom, doom, and negativity. But your flow affirmation is a really good way to address those negative thoughts. Because remember, it is your reminder of what you're like at your optimal best. And so if you can remember to answer the voice of the inner critic by saying, literally, thank you for sharing, but in point of fact, I fly, I'm energized, I'm passionate, and that's the person I choose to be today. So that is another way we can help ourselves and our clients, by tapping into the spirit of positivity to combat the voice of negativity. Any questions here? I'm going to stop and take any questions that have come up. We good? All right. Good. So we've explored the mindset of passion, of positivity. Now I'm going to talk about the third element, and that's the P of perseverance. So this, again, remember the third thing I asked you when we started to create our vision of the journey of success is the challenges that we face along the road to creating our success. Perhaps a tough coaching session where a client is really struggling and you as the coach are thinking, oh, can I help this person through this challenge? Or maybe there's, again, a tough meeting where people are resisting what it is you want to accomplish. Or perhaps you feel threatened by what other people are saying. Or maybe a big presentation, the first time you're going to present to a major audience, and you wonder, am I up to the task? So a lot of times people will view these challenging experiences and think, oh my goodness, I'm never going to do this. I'm such a failure. I blew it. Oh, I just should pack it up. I'm never going to be a good coach, right? So that's one approach to this challenging situation. But there's another way to approach those challenges, which is first to acknowledge that, yep, it was really tough and I probably didn't do my best, but I'm determined to do things better. So what can I learn from this experience? How might I achieve that goal of being better? Who might I reach out to help? What strategies might I employ so that the next time I'll feel better about myself and do a better job? So what's very interesting is that this is an example of two mindsets that have been researched by a really amazing professor at Stanford named Carol Dweck, who has written a book called Mindset, The Psychology of Success. I don't know if you've all heard of it, but when I read this book a few years ago, it really changed the way I look at the world. And I now teach it to my students at Yale, who are literally at this point masters and doctoral students who have been playing music since they were little children and have had the voice of perfectionism drilled into them with the illusion that unless they play something perfectly, they're going to be failures. So let's explore this mindset. The first one, you go to a big presentation, you don't do a good job, and you walk out of there saying, oh, I'm such a failure, I'm never going to master it. This is called the fixed mindset. And the fixed mindset comes from a place where you believe you have a fixed amount of talent and intelligence, and that the way to success is to do things the way you've always done them. So you are not willing to make mistakes or take risks or challenge yourself, because if you do, it means you're really not as smart or as talented as you think you are. And people with the fixed mindset tend to live in the world of perfectionism, thinking, I have to do it perfectly or else it's not going to be good enough. And they are not very resilient when they hit a setback. It really derails them. You see this a lot in child prodigies, child prodigy athletes, child prodigy musicians who hit a certain level and then can't go beyond it because they're so afraid to do it differently. And then the other mindset is the growth mindset, which says the perception is that my talent and my intelligence are my starting points of success. But in order for me to be successful, I need to try out new things, and I need to work hard, and I need to challenge myself. And if I make a mistake along the way, let me learn from that. And maybe I need to reach out and get help from my mentors and teachers and parents or whoever it is. And the idea here is that you keep learning and growing. And Dr. Dweck's research confirms that people with the growth mindset are the ones who are experiencing much greater success in life than those with the fixed mindset. So I have a very interesting example of this. I sit on the board of a young, very cool percussion ensemble. They've been around since, for about, 50, at this point, 10, 15 years. And when they were first getting started, nobody in the U.S. had a percussion ensemble, right? It was a pretty weird thing. But these four guys, they all happened to have gone to the Yale School of Music, which is how I know them. They said, we're going to make this happen. And everybody else said, you're crazy. Nobody's done this. And they said, we're going to do it. So very persistent. And there was one composer in particular whom they wanted to commission to write them a piece. So my friend David Lang. And so this is back in like 2005 when people didn't have good websites, when it was really hard to find people's email addresses. So one of the members of the group wanted to write to David Lang and literally wrote him 25 emails. At the time, David had just started an organization called Bang on a Can. So he wrote to dlang@bangonacan.org, dlang@bangonacan.com, d_lang. You get my point. 25 different ways until he heard back from David Lang. Now, David Lang, also an entrepreneur, a very creatively successful person, got these emails where these four young, hungry guys are looking to commission him. And he thought to himself, so these guys will do basically anything I want. Okay, I can either write them a really short piece, or I can actually write them the hour-long piece that no one else is willing to commission me. So that is what he did. He wrote them an hour-long piece that was performed in a pretty interesting venue in New York City. A New York Times critic was at that concert. They got their first good review, and that put them on the map. So this is a really interesting story, I think, that shows that with persistence and you don't give up, the first 24 email addresses don't work. Well, maybe the 25th one will work. And you just keep going. And that's what motivates a lot of people who have the growth mindset, because that, to me, is the mindset of persistence and resilience. And what's very interesting about the growth mindset is that it's a lot like flow in the sense that it's a way to combat negativity. So a lot of people think that there are four steps to combating one's fixed mindset. And the first step is very interesting. It's acceptance. It's the fact that you need to embrace both mindsets, that we all have fixed mindset, but the people who are those persistent, resilient ones are the ones who are willing to challenge the voice of the fixed mindset, the voice that says, who do you think you're kidding? You're going to be a failure. So that's number one. And there's an illusion out there that if you work on this, because this mindset literature has been around now for quite some time, about 10 years, people think, oh, I now have the growth mindset. I'm done. And I think we as coaches know that that's not true. There's always going to be challenges in life, and we have to keep working on it. But the resilient people who are committed to their success are the ones who will combat that voice. So step one, embrace it. Step two, this is really interesting. Understand your fixed mindset. So I'll give you some examples, and then maybe we can discuss that in this room. Dr. Dweck teaches at Stanford. And one of the ways she teaches her, she has an undergraduate seminar. And one of the ways she introduces the fixed mindset to them is to say, well, where does the fixed mindset crop up in your life? And what are you like when the fixed mindset takes over? What behaviors do you exhibit? And what is the, give a name to your fixed mindset. Create a persona. So I did this in my class, and the best one, I think you're going to love this one, was one of my singers, who was a really talented, wonderful young woman, so determined to be the best artist she could be, so plagued with the fixed mindset and so determined to talk back. So her fixed mindset persona, she called Sally. So the way Sally manifested is that every week, Sally would write to this young lady a newsletter outlining all of her faults. So every week, my student would receive Sally's newsletter outlining her faults. And she said, actually, by doing this exercise, it became sort of funny. That every time, you know, she thought about all the things, I don't have the right intonation, I don't know enough about Bach, I haven't studied enough, blah, 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 she would start to laugh and say, oh, that's Sally's newsletter. What can I do to get over it? How can I get better? And what was really interesting is that in her program at Yale, they have a very major concert, maybe 5 weeks into the first semester. And there she was, terrified, working with this world-famous conductor, and she went to this concert and rehearsals, terrified, and did better than she thought. But this year, because she had had a whole year of working on her growth and fixed mindsets, she went into that concert. Of course, she was a little nervous, but she felt that she really gave a phenomenal performance. So that it shows that if you work on this, you can actually get better at it. So I'm curious, as I'm talking about the fixed mindset, where do some of you experience fixed mindset? I'd love to hear. Because we all do. Anybody? Just remember, awareness and understanding it is step one. You know, so, you know, I see we're getting out of time, so let me just give you some suggestions. So with your clients or with yourself, figure out those situations in which fixed mindset thinking crops up. What does the fixed mindset sound like, right? It sounds like, oh, he's so much better than me. She's a much better coach. I'll never be as good as her. Oh, he's such a great leader. I'm just such a lightweight. You know, things like that. And then another way to combat this is our third step. So once you're aware of what you're like at the fixed mindset, your third step is to affirm your power to tame the fixed mindset. In other words, to affirm that you are not going to be stuck in a fixed mindset. And let's remember that the growth mindset is the mindset of persistence and perseverance and resilience, right? So I would love a volunteer to give, you know, to give me a situation where the fixed mindset kicks in so that I can show you what this third step looks like, because it's really quite interesting, and clients really and students really respond very positively to this. So who's got a situation? Yeah.
I've got a situation.
Sure.
So I gave a presentation to a new job a month in on morning routines. It's something that is absolutely transformational. I know for millions of people that have done it all over the world, and I had my own experience of transformation with it, and I wanted to share it with others. And this was a group of high achievers, very, very brilliant consultants. And I walked out, I had prepared so much. I tried to put so much information into it to really give them the robust experience. And what ended up happening was I had to memorize too much. I didn't quite perform the way that I wanted to.
Yes.
I was way too nervous. New job, new group.
Yeah.
They're already high achievers. I felt like I maybe used the wrong tone, the wrong approach, and I just walked out of there feeling like, gosh, I failed. This was my chance to show them wellness, and I took too long to get to the point.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I'm just listening to you, and I had a very similar experience with one of my first presentations. You know, we want so much to share and be good, and it's so hard. So, yeah, you're in good company. I'm wondering this is how a growth mindset approach would look like, okay? So the first thing to do is to understand what happened. So what do you think led to the fact that you weren't able to share from your heart the way you so wanted to?
I was so nervous.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, it's actually connected to my passion, which is presenting to others and connecting with them deeply.
Wow.
But I wasn't able to because I was way too nervous.
And so what do you think accounted for the fact that you were so nervous?
Probably that fixed mindset. I'd hyped it up and prepared myself to fail rather than prepare myself to blow them away.
Exactly. And so what did you learn from that experience?
I learned that people still got a whole lot out of it because they walk up to me every so often and let me know how what they're doing with their morning routine. But I also learned that in the future, I need to prepare to be very brief. And engage them more in the conversation.
Okay. And have you had the opportunity to present again?
No, I've been way too afraid to do it again.
Okay. Well, okay, so I want to help you with this. So let's go to the second way that we can affirm our power to change. Weigh the evidence. So you walked out of there saying, I'm a total failure, right?
Yeah, yeah, very close to that.
What is the exact thought? Let's put it down to the thought.
The thought is, I didn't give it what I could.
I didn't give it what I could, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so six mindsets of I didn't give it what I could, and you used, I think you did use the F word of failure. I think I did hear you.
Yes.
Okay, so weighing the evidence is another way to be more objective, and that's to say, okay, so the fixed mindset is basically making me feel like a failure. What is the evidence that supports the fact that I'm a failure?
These are presentation brilliant people. So the one area that I know they're so great at, it was more the approach, not the content, probably.
Right. Okay. So the approach, my approach failed. Is that
yes? Yes.
Now, so we're doing a plus and a minus column. On the other side, what's the evidence that refutes the fact that you're a failure?
Many people to this day know me as the girl who did the morning routine presentation if they were there, and they share with me their accomplishments when they have a breakthrough in this area.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So that to me sounds like you're really making a change in the culture.
I hope so.
Right. So we need a little help here, but as we weigh the evidence, we're looking at the pluses and the minuses, what conclusions are you drawing from that?
That I have a lot more to share.
Yes.
And that I need to get past my own fears of being perfect and delivering a presentation the way an experienced presenter would.
Right.
And maybe get some guidance on how to make that presentation better in the future. So that before I go in front of the audience, I have it more together.
Nice. And so how committed are you to adopting some of those steps to push you into the next level of your comfort zone?
It's part of my passion is to share the knowledge and to share this deep connection, one person at a time, but with an audience, but one person at a time.
Yeah.
So yes, I would say on a range of 1 to 10, maybe an 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that takes us to the fourth way to solidify this growth mindset, and that is to create growth mindset goals with a growth mindset plan. What do I mean by a growth mindset goal? A goal that says, I want to get better, as opposed to, I want to nail it. And this comes from research. By the way, what's your name?
Ira, I-R-A.
Yeah, Ira, great. Ira. Mm-hmm. So this comes from research that says that when we set goals, well, we have to nail it to be perfect. Again, it sets up this fear, and we don't do as well as when we set goals that say, I want to get better. And so what I'm hearing, and you said it yourself, is you'd like to get better at presenting.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I also heard a plan, because that's the other thing that we need here. I might reach out for some help. I might practice this. And so what else might your plan look like to get better at presenting and feeling more confident at presenting?
Do all of my prep work and research ahead of time so that there's enough time to take these steps of practice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we've got a couple of action steps here. You said you might want to consult some people. Whom might you consult?
Well, I think I'd want to start with my own organization.
Yeah.
And they've asked me to help build our wellness program, so that would be a great way. And so the next time I'm going to be presenting on wellness, national wellness practices and best practices around the country is going to be tomorrow, actually.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm supposed to put together some thoughts on what are the best practices of wellness programs around the country. And I have the content, but again, I need to siphon it down.
OK.
get it clear, and I'm probably procrastinating on it because of this fear of this other experience.
Sure. Well, of course, in all problem procrastinating, there's always a reason. And yes, it's understandable since you've had that experience, but how about if we try a new approach and bring the growth mindset to how we can learn to feel more confident in this?
I can put together my thoughts and limit it to just a couple slides, not try to tell them everything.
Right.
And practice it maybe with my husband at home, practice presenting it a couple times so that when I need to do it in front of an audience, I feel more comfortable and I can just talk rather than present.
Nice. So thank you so much, because you just exemplified for us the fourth aspect, the fourth step in solidifying the growth mindset, which is to set a growth goal and make a plan and commit to action. So thank you, Ira, for taking us through that. And in our last minute, I will just mention the fourth element of the mindset of creative success, which is proactivity, meaning you don't wait for the phone to ring or the email to come in. You actually go off and do it. So I think we're out of time here. Maybe there's a last, we have 3 minutes, so if there's any last burning desire questions, I'm very happy to answer them. Anything? Okay, so I'm going to invite you all to use this for yourselves, to inspire yourselves to create a success, and to use this with your clients to help them, because there's so much that we as coaches can do to really inspire our clients to adopt this mindset. Because I really do believe this is the starting point. It's the mental game of success that starts with believing in ourselves, empowering our passion, overcoming those obstacles, and taking actions that are going to get us to the success that we long to achieve. So thank you so much.
And thank you, Astrid, for energizing us. For the mindset of success, there are many comments in the chat thanking you and also thanking Ira for sharing something that was a very useful demonstration of what you were offering us, Astrid. So guess who we have next month? Kathy? Tony?
Yes.
Yes, Kathy and I were at the ACTO conference, and Kathy managed to secure Tony Zampello, who is an amazing speaker on a topic, active listening. But it's going to be different from what you think it's going to be. So you're going to have to come, and that will be March 18th. Kathy and I both appreciate very much all of you being here, learning, and of course this will be on the Sun website. Within 2 or 3 days, so that you can slow it down and take pieces that you found most interesting and go right into it and use it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Astrid. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Astrid.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Amazing.
Thank you.